The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, you know what time it is. It's time for the True Wealth Radio Show on this, the greatest Tuesday you've had all week. I am your host, Dave Littlejohn, and in studio today,
Matt Dixon.
And it's just the two of us.
It is.
I feel like old times.
Yep.
Because I feel old.
A lot of years.
Yep. Well, hey, that's all right. We mix it up from time to time. This really doesn't feel like we're mixing it up. I just feel like this is what we do. So, but stoked to be here. Where today, Matt, what have we got on the docket?
Well, you know, we got the opportunity to go out and grab some lunch today, and one of the ideas that kind of spun around was, you know, what do people who are nearing retirement, they're like at that kind of that last final step, right, where they're like, well, I maybe could pull the plug right now, or do I need to work for another 2 years? How do you ask yourself the right questions in order to know whether or not you're able or in a good spot maybe to retire? What are the questions that you got to ask yourself?
This started as, are there financial hacks? And I think we'll cover some of those too. There's a couple things that are sort of like financial shortcuts. They're not guarantees or anything, but it's like, well, if it looks like this, you're probably good.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah, I like this backdrop of, hey, you should ask yourself a few key questions. If you're thinking about retiring or you're getting close, or really, I mean, if someday you want to retire, these are the questions you should be able to answer too. So yeah, I like it. Where do we even start with something like that?
Well, maybe we'll start with
five. I bet you there's 200 questions you could ask.
Well, think about it this way. You've talked to thousands of people at this point, right? And so maybe start with some of the things that you might ask initially when someone's exploring this topic. Because I know one of the things that I'll talk with people about right out of the gate is just health, which I know it's kind of morbid to jump right into that, but it's like, hey, you know, you're talking about wanting to retire and you're saying, do I have enough? And I'll ask just, you know, kind of right to the point. Well, how long do you think you're going to live for? 30 years, 10 years? And some people are like, man, you know, I've got a heart condition. I'd be lucky to make it 5. And I'm like, well, that's a lot different than if we're planning for you to live till 95 instead of 70. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think one of the starting spots for me, at least when I'm talking with someone, is, well, how long do you want me to plan for here?
Mm-hmm.
Because it really can make a difference.
Well, it's true. How long are you going to live? Mm-hmm. But that's just the brutal reality question. What
we're
really saying is, how long do you need this money to last?
Yep, exactly.
You know, the idea being there's a nest egg of some kind. Although that's not the whole question. I think there's a question you could ask before that, and they kind of mesh together, right? There's a bunch of financial questions, but they're not all financial, right?
Right.
The first one being, well, is there really a first? They all need to get answered, right?
Yeah, I mean,
so I don't know that these are.
We're not really going in order because, you know, you also ask people, you know, like, what's your lifestyle look like? And, you know,
I think that's the first question to me is, how much does it cost to do life the way you want to do it?
Mm-hmm. Right, because if they come back and they're like, well, I only need about $2,000 a month and I've got like $4 million, it's like, well, it doesn't really matter how long you plan to live for.
Yeah, Yeah, that's a good – it's that first grounding question, because to me what it really does is it helps as an advisor. I go, all right, are we in the ballpark of possible or not? Mm-hmm. And it gives me a sense of how much somebody's thought about this, because if you have – I mean, you would think I'm kidding, but I'm not. I mean, I've had people come to me. They have like $9,000 saved. They're looking to retire in like a year, and they're like, so if we get started now –
in the next 2 years, can we
retire in like 2 years, What I was thinking about, there's these some stocks I was reading about, and you know they're gonna and what they're really telling me is they think there is some way that with $8,000 or $9,000 it's like a casino, and they're gonna just be able to stack several wins in a row and then build a bunch of money and be able to be done. And what I'm telling, I mean, most of the people listening to our show, I think you kind of everybody is rolling their eyes a little bit with me, going like, "Come on, man." Right,
but it does happen.
Well, it really does happen, and I have to tell you that if somebody was capable of doing that consistently, there's a really good chance they're not going to share the secret with you, because markets do not like exploits. Right, exploits disappear over time. Because of that, you do not want to share an exploit that you've discovered, or it will disappear faster.
Mm-hmm.
And folks that are students of the market understand this, which is why I don't think it's likely or probable that you're ever going to find somebody that's just so benevolent. Well, I cracked the code. I made infinity money, and I don't need it anymore. So now I'm just sharing it out of the goodness of my heart. BS. No, they're not. They are selling you a system, and if you have to pay for it,
yeah,
then they're selling you the dream that they're going to make you a ton of money,
right?
Or that you're going to make a ton of money using their system. And that's even more specious, right? Because now they're not even going to be the ones doing it for you. It's up to you to do it.
I mean, statistically, it's so improbable to take this small little amount and then make such good decisions that it just rapidly multiplies.
Well, even if you were to look at all of the really amazing opportunities in the marketplace, it would be hard to structure something aggressive enough to pull that off most of the time.
Yeah.
Maybe you could do it with radical amounts of leverage.
Maybe.
But, yeah. You know, how many stocks out there are you going to find that can double in short order, and then you can stack several of those in a row?
Yeah, I
if
mean,
you think about how many times you have to double $9,000 to get to, you know, 2 million.
Right.
And it's still 8 or 9 times in a row. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I haven't done the math, but I'm going to guess it's like 8 or 9 times.
Yeah. And it takes a lot of money anymore to retire, right? Like, based on what a lot of people's spending needs are. And it's crazy how much of a difference, you know, spending $6,000 a month versus spending $4,000 a month will make over the course of 20 years. You know, that's a huge, huge difference. And a lot of people don't think about it that way. They're like, well, it's just there, right? And maybe it'll last and maybe it won't. And they just kind of sometimes retire without thinking about things, or they just throw caution to the wind and they're like, well, it'll be fine, right? I'll make it work.
Yeah. And there's a little bit of, as habits are, they'll continue to be. Mm-hmm. And so the person that has no idea what they spend, they have no budget, they just kind of drift along, and then they show up and say, well, you know, now I've kind of did some forced savings because maybe my employer had a retirement plan, something like that. So
yeah,
we're good, right? And I go, I don't know. You don't know. I mean, who's going to know?
Right.
Your numbers are completely fictional for the most part. It's like, well, you just kind of spend whatever's there. Well, then no, I don't know that you're good. We're talking extreme examples here, right?
Right.
But there are scenarios where people are really like that. It's okay. That's just a little bit too loosey-goosey for me, right? It's mm-hmm. It's a little too much, you know, peace, love, and happiness, and not enough math.
Yeah, I mean, the math gets pretty wild. I think I put something together that said if you need, and don't quote me on this because this was like math on the fly, right? But like if you're needing about $6,000 a month to live on after taxes, that comes out to what, $72,000 a year?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if that stretches for somewhere around 25 years, that might be around what, $1 million, one point.
I think it's probably a seven-figure account. I see the numbers you've got. My guess is it's not really that high because a couple things. One,
it depends on the growth rate of the account.
Yeah, there's going to be some conservative investment assumptions in there, and it looks like it's calculated to live off the interest only.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's two things that you have to consider in the reality check of life is one,
right.
You probably get closer to normalized market returns. We
right.
use really conservative returns on purpose.
Right. If you take the return out of it, though, so over 25 years, $72,000 a year, that's $1.8 million. And like you said, some of it's got to be growth, right? Because you're not just...
Yeah, I assume you're not just putting it in the mattress.
Right. Now, some people do. But that's wild, right? Like,
that's my, if you could see, if those of you watching us on YouTube, you'd see the it's not really an eye roll. It's that sort of sad acknowledgement part about, yeah, there are some people that do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are some people that do that. The reason that you hear in my voice a little bit of disappointment is it doesn't have to be like that. And right. I'm on a mission to try to educate more people to make good financial decisions. It's a little bit of the, it's like Dave Ramsey was the get out of debt guy, and I'm the let's just get financially smart guy. Can we just make better financial decisions so that you're in a position to be more, to have more financial freedom?
Yeah.
That would be really an awesome one here. So, okay. So on just a pure math basis,
yeah,
25 years, $72,000 per year, you're going to need almost $1.8 million
right.
if you made zero.
Yeah.
Then the reality is you're going to probably make more than zero. And the other reality is that your spending's probably going to be erratic, and we can spend it down to zero. But so,
yeah, I mean, yeah.
But it's interesting math. It's interesting
right.
math when you look at it and say, well, are we going to just have it be the interest that we live off of? And so we have a nest egg and it never depletes? Or is this going to be an ice cube that slowly melts and we just hope it's not gone before we are?
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's more questions. I'm looking at the clock and already, you know, we're through the first segment. We gotta grab a break. So what we'll do, we'll do that. We're going to take a break. We will come back. And we're going to continue with some of these questions that you should be able to ask. So I think the first question is, how long are you going to make it? And what's your life going to cost you? So
perfect.
What else should we be asking? We will cover that and more when we come back. Stick around. You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240. Take you in.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. We are streaming it live on YouTube if you want to join us there. And, of course, if you missed the beginning of it, you can also go grab the podcast. It'll be available tomorrow at littlejohnfs.com, which is kind of the gateway to all the things that we do, right?
Yep.
So you can start there. You can ask chat questions. A little thing will come up, and that actually goes to real people behind the scenes, so we actually get those messages. And you can call the phone number that's on the screen. You can text that number. We have lots of ways to reach us, so that's cool. Matt, today we're covering questions
yep.
that people should be able to answer before they retire.
Right.
Right? So we got kind of five key questions. I think within those, there's the old questions within the questions.
Mm-hmm.
So these are big picture questions that are designed to get you to think and figure out some more. The first one, you went straight for the jugular.
When you gonna die?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Which is really a question about how long does the money need to last?
Right.
Okay. And that's where some of the math comes out of that. It's a morbid question, but it's a real one. And we're grown-ups. We can handle this. Right. But I think that we need to continue down this pathway. There's some other questions. I love this one, the way it's phrased. Matt, if I ask, where will your income come from? Can you unpack that for me? Because I feel like there's a lot in there, and it seems simple. But where's your income going to come from? Why are you asking that?
I feel like 30% of the people I talk to say silly things like, it's going to – Social Security, right? Like, that's my retirement. And I'm like, whoa, like – unless you can dramatically reduce your spending habits, I don't know that that cuts it, right? And so that's one of the big ones that people often kind of go to is like, well, I've got Social Security. Some people will say, I'm going to replace some of my income with the 401k I had at my work. So when I retire, there's going to be some funds there. For some people, it's different. It's, well, I have a bunch of rental homes. The rental homes are going to be my income stream. And then for some people, they can, you know, they just work to grow a business, and then they're banking 100% on that business sale funding their retirement. And so it really looks different for a lot of people, and it can come in a lot of different ways. A lot of really successful people have multiple streams. So they'll have the 401k or the retirement account, and maybe they do have a business to sell and they have real estate. So it's like, wow, your retirement income is very diversified. Even if the stock market drops 20%, you've still got these other assets that are paying you in retirement.
Right. I think it's interesting because we ask the question, where will your income come from? But maybe it's not necessarily income, right? The reason I use that term, I have to stop saying right. If we do not start the meter where we count the number of times that I say right, it will be out of control.
Do you want me to raise my hand every time you say it?
I do not want this to happen, right?
Hand signal.
So I want to figure out how to speak without saying right all the time.
Oh, how about shock collar, electrotherapy? You give me the remote and then just like every time you say
it. I hijacked the show with my own question. Doggone it. So if we're talking about income, income has a specific definition from a tax perspective. But income doesn't have to mean income. It could just mean I have a savings account and I'm pulling money back out of it. It's not income, but it's kind of what the question means, right? The question is, what are you going to live on? What are the sources that are going to provide you with the money that you need to exist? And Social Security can be one of those, and you listed a whole host of others. But yeah, it concerns me when people don't have a good sense of where that's going to come from. Or some people will really overestimate the capacity of their nest egg, right? And that's, there it is again.
So if I had the shock collar, imagine, like, especially if we turned it up a little bit.
I would yip.
Yeah, well, imagine how many more viewers we would get just because they'd be, like, waiting. They're, like, on the edge of the seat. They're, like, is he going to get zapped? Is he going to get zapped? Is he going to get zapped?
It might be a brilliant idea if we're just after more viewers.
How many viewers do you want?
I don't know that it's worth that.
We could put a shock collar around your neck, one around each arm, you know, just.
I'm going to be much more aware of what I say. So, kill me, Smalls. I want to talk about income sources.
We're on very different pages, aren't we?
People that overestimate the capacity of their nest egg.
Oh,
okay. You've got $100,000, and they say, well, that should be fine, right? So, well, you spend, this time they're allowed to ask that question. That should be fine, shouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, depends, right?
You know what a lot of people make the mistake, right? You want to know one of the biggest mistakes I see is when people, they do numbers differently. They look at things and they're like, well, I've got a $3,000 a month, Social Security income. And then all of my bills are $1,000 a month, and then my mortgage is $2,000. That's $3,000 right there. Hey, I'm fine, right? Like $3,000 equals $3,000, I'm good. And then you're like, what about inflation? And then their eyes start to like glaze over, and they're like, huh? And you're like, well,
every year your taxes are going to get a little more expensive on your home.
Yeah, and that's a hard concept for a lot of people.
Things get a little bit more expensive. Yeah. Gas goes up. Food goes up. Mm-hmm. All those things in your life get more expensive. What are you doing to have your income keep up with inflation? And Social Security does have a small cost of living escalator built into it, so that's good. But I see people that will look at things like a nest egg and say, well, I have $100,000, and I need to be able to take $20,000 a year out of it. And we'll just be able to earn enough interest to fill that back up. To which I say, no, no. You take a 20% withdrawal, that account's probably gone in 6-7 years.
Right.
Because you're going to be taking significantly more than it is realistically capable of generating.
Yeah, you're like, do you expect the market to do 20% every single year?
Yeah, that's what you're suggesting is, hey, my $100,000 account's going to make $20,000, and I'll take that out and live on that.
But David, have you seen the markets over the last 2 years?
Crazy enough, yes, I have. We're talked living about whether or not to do a really
wild
significant
times.
Show about that, because the markets are just really hard to handicap right now. They're not making a whole lot of sense. That doesn't mean they're not going to go higher. That's the conclusion we reached is, great, it looks like crazy town. Could get crazier.
Yep.
I remember 1999. Those numbers didn't make sense. And they kept going up until they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because in 98, they didn't make sense either.
Yeah.
And 99, they really didn't make sense. In 2000, everybody agreed they no longer made sense. But for a season, nobody cared. Let's keep making money. Ring the register while you can.
That greed thing is real, right? Like, looking at it, oh, I made, you know, $5,000 in the market today. And next day, oh, it's up another. No one wants to sell when everyone's getting rich, right?
Correct. So it is a thing. Consider that I'm not bashing on Social Security when I say this. Okay. I actually think you should consider that it's going to be there. Politically, it's very unlikely it's going to disappear. Is it underfunded? It is, in the sense that actuarially we don't have enough people paying in to sustain it.
Right. So you mentioned something just a second ago where you were talking about if you're over there pulling 20% of your retirement account every year, mm-hmm. you know, you could realistically burn through that in under 10 years. Where do you kind of look at this and say you're probably somewhat okay if you're pulling about this percentage? And say you need it to last 20, maybe 30 years. Is there kind of like some math here that you want to?
So this is a math hack.
Okay.
Right? This is called the 4% rule.
Okay. Talk about that and why it is 4% and how it kind of works.
The way it was calculated, some folks did a whole bunch of different tests. I don't know who and I don't remember when. It's sort of legend now in the financial field, but it's largely... It works.
Okay.
There are probably better ways to do it if you want to get more precise. But nevertheless, this is a really good financial shortcut. What it posits is that if you were to take 4% of the value of your account out each year, that it is unlikely that you will deplete the account if it is earning typical investment returns for a period of not less than 30 years. So you consider, oh, I'm going to start my retirement at 65. Mm-hmm. You should have 30 years of income if you assume that your withdrawal rate is 4% or lower.
Mm.
And this is because historically the market returns more than that.
Right.
And the beauty of it is if you're just taking 4% out and your account grows 10%, well, next year you're taking 4% of a slightly larger number. So it does build in some protection for inflation.
Right.
But this financial shortcut is also a really quick way to do math, because if you were to look at an account and say, well, I want to only spend the interest.
Mm.
How much money do I need if I want to live off of the interest on it? And what I would suggest is this financial shortcut is the same as saying, well, take however much money you need in a year and multiply it by 20.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I need $100,000 a year that I want to take out. Okay, then you need $2 million in an account. 20 times 100,000. And that $2 million at the 4% rule should be pretty close. I think I did the math right on that. Now, I guess it's 25, right? 4% is 25. Why? 0.04, if you actually do the fractions over it, it's 1/25.
Right.
So multiply 25. So you need $2.5 million to live off the interest only and have $100,000 a year at 4%.
It's crazy. And a lot of people, I think, look at numbers that are way lower than that, and they're like, yep, sounds great. And like,
well, before I buzzkill everybody, I know we're up against a break here, but before I buzzkill you, I'm here to tell you that that number is pretty aggressive. I don't think it needs to be that high. I just think when it is, if you had $2.5 million to fund a $100,000 a year retirement plan, you're likely in very good shape.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it has to be that high.
Tell me why.
If you look at that.
Tell me why.
I will, but let's take our break. We'll come back. And then I'm going to kind of explain the math and why maybe it's not hopeless. Because if you're like, $2.5 million, come on, that's punt, right? It's not that bad. We'll explain. Stick around.
Okay.
I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. We're back on the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
Matt.
Yes.
We're talking about income and retirement and the questions that people need to be able to answer before they officially pull the plug and become retired. My definition of retirement in this case is leaving the workforce.
Yep.
Right? Because some people say, oh, I'm retired. And it's like, but you're still going to work.
Yep.
Are you retired? It's like, your definition looks different than mine. Whatever. So we talked about the 4% rule. This is the idea that if you basically took 25 times your income requirement, that's how much money you need. So if you wanted to spend $100,000 a year in retirement, you need $2.5 million. right?
Okay.
Okay. Then
where did we leave our listeners off? I think we had a cliffhanger for them.
The cliffhanger was, does it really need to be that high?
Right.
And I think the answer is probably not.
Okay.
First of all, that largely assumes that you're never going to spend the money down. If you look at a traditional 60-40 investment portfolio with about 60% equities, 40% fixed income, you're probably going to have a 7-8% annualized return.
Mm-hmm.
If you net out taxes and everything else, call it 6-7%. But you're talking about a 4% distribution and still earning 6% in the account. That will likely lead to an account that is continuing to grow, which is great because it should be an inflation hedge, but you're likely to never deplete the account at all. And you may create an estate planning problem where you have estate taxes and somebody else is going to end up with a big nest egg that could have done more for your lifestyle with less.
And what's the flip side of that? It is you just keep spending and spending and spending, and it does walk backwards. Because wasn't your original assumption like trying to make sure that you never run out of money? It kind of breaks even.
I like to use these two silly analogies, but they're simple. One of them is altitude hold. It's like, hey, I got in an airplane and I put the autopilot on and we're just going to stay at 30,000 feet.
And that's kind of what you were alluding to with the
4%. That's sort of what the 4% rule is intended to do, is we're just going to use the interest and live off that and we're never going to lose any altitude.
Mm-hmm.
Our nest egg will sort of stay the same. The other is to say, well, this money doesn't have to all be there when I'm gone. It just doesn't need to be gone before I am.
Yeah.
I call this more like, I call this glide slope, if you're familiar with aviation terms. It's about how do you land on the runway using instruments to figure out, you know, you got to get to the ground.
Yeah.
Okay. And the trick is with a glide slope, you don't want to land before the runway. That's a crash and burn event. In real life, you don't want to land beyond the runway either. But the beauty of retirement is the runway is kind of infinity long. Like, you're not going to overshoot the runway. It just means that you died with some money left over.
Yeah.
You just don't want to die early. That's crashing before the runway. So what we want to do is the account can dwindle. You just want it don't want it gone before you are. In that case, maybe another way to think about it is you've got an ice cube and it's slowly melting. You just want to make sure that you still have an ice cube before you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That does not require as much money.
Correct.
Okay. I still think you need to know the first question, how long are you going to live? You got to kind of target how long it needs to last. And then you need to have some realistic assumptions of what it's going to return and some cushion in there in case you're wrong. But it doesn't take 25 times the amount of money. I think it's more like 12 to 15 times.
One of the big ones that people often have like a moment with when we're talking is revolving around healthcare. They just don't factor that into the equation, right? And then like making sure that they have some form of insurance or something to kind of like hold them over.
Well, and it's really the next big question, isn't it? If you think about asking how long am I going to live, and then where's my income going to come from?
Right.
Then the next question is going to be, what are some of the expenses that I really need to pay attention
to? The hidden expenses.
Yeah.
And healthcare is one of the biggest ones, I think.
I think you're absolutely right. And my take on this, too, is while our politicians are trying to figure out what to do with this thing, I don't trust them to conjure a solution in a meaningful amount of time.
No.
Which means I think it's up to us to all be personally responsible for these things. It is... I'll just be the first to tell you, it's one of the most frustrating things in financial planning, right?
Yeah, because one bad accident or one big health scare, and it's like, well, the whole plan has been upended.
I take it a step further than that too, though. Actually, I think that you can actuarially sort of say, here's how we insure for accidents and this, that, and the other. It doesn't fix a plan. You know, if you have an unanticipated event, it blows the plan up.
Right.
Maybe not financially. It just blows the plan up because your capacity is now changed. Great. I can't do those things anymore because of this accident.
Yeah.
So those things, that's a different kind of challenge. But I'm just talking about the industry itself, right?
Oh.
Healthcare is such a hot mess. It's just out of control. Inflation way hotter than anywhere else in the economy. And super partisan, super political, super screwed up, and super expensive, and getting more so. And healthcare is just really out of control. Mini rant, right? Here's my mini rant. You ready?
Yeah.
One of the issues that I have is that healthcare is used as a tool to try to equalize incomes among a lot of Americans,
right.
Especially in the middle class segment. The fact that some people get subsidies and some people don't kind of makes everybody look the same regardless of how much income.
Yeah.
Because great, the person over here makes more money, but they pay more for their health care. Person over here makes less, but they don't pay for their health care. So your lifestyle is effectively the same.
The thing that gets me with health care the most is, so like in almost anything in this world, like if you go to buy a new car, right, you know what the price is. Or if you want to go out to eat, you can look at the menu and say, well, okay, a cheeseburger is $12. But like you want to go in and, you know, get some healthcare stuff taken care of. A lot of the times, you know, you have no idea what it's going to cost. And so it's just this go in and grit your teeth and hope that you don't come out just maimed for life, right?
Well, I make this joke a lot. So our regular listeners will have heard this before. I always say healthcare is a lot like buying something from a minivar in Las Vegas. You have no idea what it costs, and you know that when you get the bill later, it's going to hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'd be kind of nice to just be able to shop it a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Say, well, you know, and you kind of can on some things, like an MRI or something where you're paying out of pocket. You can call around and be like, well, what do you guys charge? Oh, it's, you know, $4,000, but if I drive another 10 miles up the road, it's $3,000. Okay, I'm willing to drive 10 more miles.
Yes. That is the fascinating thing. For cash payers, there is a lot more wiggle room because the provider knows what they're getting,
mm-hmm.
right? When it comes to insurance companies, it feels like kind of a blind situation for everybody because even the providers, you know, the doctors, they don't know what they're going to get paid. They're like, well, we're going to bill for this and stuff, and we'll see what the insurance companies say. And so they have to kind of pick a number that's in the ballpark of reality. But the insurance company then says, well, here's how much we're going to actually pay you for. And then they decide they're either going to write it off or they're going to try to bill for the above and beyond reasonable and customary charges to the customer. Regardless, it's a very expensive proposition of tracking, bookkeeping, and billing. And it's just shenanigans. Honestly, the healthcare system pisses me off because of its lack of transparency.
Yeah.
Everybody that says, well, we need a single payer system. I'm like, great. Where's the transparency in that? Then it's just the outcomes are there's zero competition to improve outcomes or anything like that. I think that what we need is every insurance company has to disclose what their panel negotiated for pricing.
Yeah.
I just make it that, well, there are no secret negotiations. Everybody can see what everybody else negotiated.
Kind of pull the dark black curtain off of the back into the healthcare system. I don't know what the solve is because I don't
know
healthcare.
I'm off the reservation.
Well,
it's just capitalism doesn't work without price discovery, right? You can't have price manipulation, which is what the government does in a lot of cases, and then expect to have a capital system. Now, those of you that are stomping up and down saying it shouldn't be capitalist, I would say, well, hold on. If that's what insurance would work for, is in a capitalist system. That's where you can price things. If it's not going to be capitalist and it's going to be socialist, we don't have insurance anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a whole different game. We basically have cost sharing. Okay, so you can pick your camp, but what you can't do is pick incompatible systems and take your favorite parts of each one and then pretend the bad parts don't talk nice to each other.
Yeah.
So, or the bad parts do talk nice to each other. You get it, right? I mean what I mean, not what I say. Whatever. So healthcare, what do people spend?
I think on average in retirement, the bill ends up being like over $300,000 that a married couple will spend over the course of their like retired lives on healthcare.
You're just talking about premiums,
all of it, out of pocket costs. Yeah, if you need like long-term care at some point, which man, that one keeps getting more and more expensive. It's crazy to hear the numbers behind.
Yeah, that one is. And I don't like to lump long-term care into the healthcare expense the same way, but regardless, it's a real issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because what is the one of the most expensive things in the United States is getting sick or hurt and not dying.
Yeah.
And it just having it linger and linger and linger. It's great. ask somebody that's got, you know, a difficult diagnosis and they have a really specialty medication, and you see these
I got a
20,
good quote.
$30,000, $50,000, $100,000 a month for prescriptions. It's like, oh my gosh.
I got a good quote for you.
I'm ready.
Health is wealth until it starts billing you monthly.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to respond to that other than to roll my eyes. It's like,
you're
it's
welcome.
Sad, though. It's sad.
I like bringing a little bit of cheese to the show.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, look, let's grab our last break. We're at the point where we got to do that. We've got just one or two questions left.
Okay.
You want to know? You're close to being ready to retire? Stick with us, and we'll get you over the goal line. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Okay, home stretch of the True Well Show. Dave Littlejohn with
Matt Dixon.
Matt,
yes.
We have only a handful of questions to go for our friends as we are talking about what you need to be able to answer going into retirement. Recap, we've talked about how long does your retirement need to last and how much will it cost?
Correct.
We've talked about where are you going to get the money from? What are the resources?
Yep, that's another one.
We have talked about unanticipated costs, or maybe anticipated, but that you need to think about. And the big one in the room that we talked about was healthcare.
Yikes. Yes. Not a fun subject.
What am I missing?
I think one of the questions that people have a hard time answering is, are you actually mentally ready to retire? Because a lot of people really like what they do. They feel like it gives them purpose. And, you know, they feel like they got to retire because age is this number, right? And it's like, well, full Social Security is at 67 years old and I turned 67. So, you know what? I guess it's time to retire, right? And that's just what they think that they need to do. When the reality is, maybe they're okay to work another couple years because they really, really like their job and the money won't hurt. And so it's like, no, like if you want to keep working, go for it. Like put in another 2 years. That's fine.
How do you respond? This is out of the notes. I'm going to pop yeah. quiz you on this. How do you respond to the younger generation that says, oh, great. Now we've got another baby boomer that won't leave the workforce and won't make space for everybody else to move up into those positions.
Worry about yourself. That would be what I'd say. It's just like, well, you know, let them do what they want. Like, go find – there's a million jobs out there. Go find the one that you like and work as long as you want. And if you can retire early and that's what you want to do, do it. Do what you want to do. It's a free country.
It is. I like the fact that – It's not really a victim thing.
Yeah.
Right? Somebody else decides they want to keep working. Okay.
Yeah.
The folks that are younger, you shouldn't have to pick somebody else off in order to become
exactly.
valuable to an organization.
That's what I think.
I think yeah. that it's a false idea that there's only a finite amount of work in the economy. If you create
you
more
can
value,
create,
you will
yeah.
be valuable.
Yeah.
So that is my take on this one. I understand why it's popular because it's kind of attractive on occasion for folks to start throwing groups of people under the bus for whatever reason. I am guilty of it. So there you go. But, okay. I do like that question
yeah.
that you've asked, Matt.
Yeah.
What if you're not, you know, are you mentally and emotionally ready to be retired?
Right.
Okay. What
I think there is like, one bigger question than that.
I
though.
Feel like there's an elephant in the room question.
I think the big question, maybe I'm on the wrong topic, but I my mind goes to what happens when you're actually gone, right? Like a lot of people don't necessarily think
no,
about
that's
that.
That's a different question. That's yeah. a different elephant, but still.
Yeah, because like you have these assets, you have these things, retirement accounts and homes and all the other stuff. And then, you know, I'd say most people tend to somewhat like their kids, or at least one of them, right? And so it's like, I think part of the consideration is how are you going to make sure that the stuff that you leave to your kids is a blessing and not a burden?
Okay. So the estate, what happens to your stuff when you're gone?
Yep. A lot of people don't consider a will or a trust or anything. And they're just like, well, when I die, the stuff will just kind of go where it goes. And that's often, I think, when you get a lot of internal fighting, because people get weird with money, right? It's like,
they do.
Let's scrap over that recliner. I bet I can get $150 on Marketplace for it. And it's like, whoa, guys. Like,
that one, I'm unfamiliar with that. Jeez. But I believe it could happen.
Oh, it happens.
All right. This is the last one. I feel like there's a question that it's not as hard as people think, but it is an important one when you're approaching your retirement.
Okay.
That is, how are you going to navigate the various things that the IRS throws at you?
Like there's on a tax whole, side?
There's a tax side of this that is about efficiency, but there's also things that a lot of folks have never dealt with. Many folks have never dealt with filing quarterly taxes before.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's a whole new experience as they transition into retirement. Other folks, they don't really understand the idiosyncrasies of getting money out of retirement plans and how that can alter their exposure to taxes. So these things are important to consider when you're developing a plan. So I just wouldn't overlook them. So if we were going to boil this down here in the final minutes, I feel like we've kind of hit the big questions, right? How long do you need the money for and how much?
Mm-hmm.
What sources of income can you access? Pensions, retirement plans, et cetera, real estate, whatever that may be. Then are you going to try to leave a nest egg behind, or are you going to be comfortable spending your assets down?
Right.
How are you going to navigate taxes? How are you going to navigate healthcare? At some point, who is going to be responsible for your stuff when you no longer are? And then, of course, the question over all of them is, are you ready?
Yeah.
Is it time?
What if someone is sitting there in that recliner and they're listening to the radio show and they're like, you know what? It is time to start kind of planning around this and getting a second opinion because, hey, I don't do this for a living. How do they get a hold of us if they want us to do it?
Right. So the simple way we've talked about, if you go to our website, it's got all the different contact information. So it's littlejohnfs.com. That's financial services. So littlejohnfs.com. You can call us, 541-375-0898. You can text us there. You can email us. If you go to the website, you'll find the emails, all that stuff. There's texting and all that. There's lots of ways to reach us. Here's the part that I would really impress upon people. I think some folks are either they self-select out because they think they're not eligible or for whatever reason that it's only for rich people or whatever it is and they don't qualify. I would say don't disqualify yourself from getting good advice because of a rumor or a misnomer, right? We really are here to try to help whoever we can help.
Okay.
Doesn't mean everybody's going to become a customer, and that's okay.
Right.
You'd be surprised the number of people that come in, have a free consultation, sit down, get some good information, figure a few things out, realize that they're in decent shape. They don't become customers, and we are totally okay with that. If you walk out the door better than you walked in the door, no big deal.
Right.
And that is Count that's kind that of our goal,
yeah.
Is it's not a high-pressure environment. That's not how we do this. We educate, we talk, we train, and at the end of the day, if the solutions that we offer make sense, then people tend to do them, and if they don't make sense, then that is okay too. Our goal is to get you to the spot where you're going to be successful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that I think is the real takeaway on this one. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. If you don't have somebody in your life, then we're here. But if you do, find someone you like and trust and reach out to them. There's a lot of great practitioners out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So we're not viewing this as there's more than enough to go around. We don't have to worry about if you've got somebody, great, call them. It's fine. And tell them, hey, I heard these guys on the radio and they told me to ask you this. Perfect. Go do that.
You can trust anyone you hear on the radio.
Right. Well, looking at the clock, we got to run. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You've been listening to True Wealth. Thanks. Until next time, have a great one.